We'll conclude the story behind Hutch in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Minnesota studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this rain report. Last week, we introduced you to the remarkable story behind Russell Hutchinson. Hutch, as he was known, was an American GI serving out a miserable existence in a Japanese POW camp in the Philippines with 1,600 other Americans during the last several years of World War II. This savvy young man with a Herculean spirit devised an ingenious way to accumulate enough parts to build a working radio under the virtual noses of his Japanese captors. Hutch's story was told this past February during the North Shore Radio Club's winter banquet in Wilmette, Illinois, by Dave Kripe, NM0S, a ham who has built an exact replica of the aforementioned radio. Here's the conclusion of Dave's speech about Russell Hutchinson, Radio Boy.
Now, when the prisoners were brought into the camps, the guards interviewed them. What is your name? What is your occupation? The Japanese wanted to find skilled people who could work in the camp to help them out, with the expectation that they would receive lenient treatment or get additional food or additional medicine. And to a man, virtually every one of the prisoners said, no, I'm not going to help. But Hutch realized that maybe he could use his radio skills to get him through the situation. So he went to the guards and said, I know electronics. I can repair radios. Can I help? In the Philippine Islands, as the Filipinos retreated ahead of the advancing Japanese, they broke every radio, so it would not be able to be used by the Japanese. So the Japanese had all these broken radios. They wanted to have them playing so that they could listen to the music out of Manila. So they brought these radios into Hutch. Can you fix? Oh, I can fix. So he had a little workshop set up, and he would go through the radios, make a list of all the parts that needed replacing, give that list of parts to the guard. Guard would go to Manila, bring back the new parts. Once in a while, Hutch would take a 1 meg resistor or 0.01 mic cap, a good one, out of the busted radio and say, this is bad, I need a new one. And he would pocket the good capacitor and wait for the replacement to come from Manila. He didn't want to do it all at once, so over the course of a month or two, he was able to pocket and hide away in the cabin all of the parts that he needed to build his radio. Where to hide it? That's another question. He found behind the cabin a mahogany 2x4 that was kind of split. Took that split 2x4 and with a sharpened screwdriver, hollowed it out. Built the radio in there. I had mentioned that it was generally frowned upon within the prison population to cooperate with the Japanese. What Hutch did was negotiate his payment in quinine, which he distributed to the rest of his cabin to help with the malaria. So he didn't benefit, but his cabin did. And this way, he not only stayed on the good side of the Japanese, but also the cabin mates within his area. One piece at a time, he gathered his components. He snuck into the infirmary and borrowed the cauterization iron, which he used as a soldering iron, and assembled in the dark at night his radio inside the hollowed out 2x4. Improvised a power supply, which he hid in a shaving kit, and then he was done. The 200 feet of enameled wire he braided into a clothesline, an inch at a time. Took him a couple of days, but he's got time on his hands. Strung the clothesline across the camp over to the latrine. The latrine had AC power for a single light bulb in the middle of it. And he lined up with trusted buddies a watch system so that while he was using his radio, they would watch for guards and there would be a whistle and he would know that he would have to ditch his radio really quick. So with his 2x4 in one hand and the shaving kit in the other, he would fake symptoms of dysentery. Oh, benjo, benjo, which is Japanese and you can look it up, and run off to the latrine. And with the door slammed behind him, he would dash over, unscrew the light bulb, plug in his power supply cord, pull out the headphones, plug in the headphone cord, string the antenna wire into the window, hook it up, put it on, turn the knob, turn the knob, turn the knob, and try to tune in a station. And what he was listening for was KGEI. KGEI was the 50,000-watt shortwave broadcaster on the 31-meter band from San Francisco. And this broadcaster was the home broadcast studio of General Electric, which they had built before the war as a sales tool all throughout the Pacific so that people who bought the GE radios could have something to listen to. But in the middle of the war, the federal government realized that this could be a powerful propaganda tool, and at KGEI, the Voice of America was born. They had the noted journalist William Winter giving daily news reports from the KGEI studio. And so there at the latrine, with the headphone put on one ear, furiously tuning in and adjusting the regeneration with the other hand, he heard them. KGEI. And this guy singing. Come on, news, news, news. And finally, when the guy was done singing, they was announced as some new up and rising guy, Frank Sinatra, who cares? And then came the news. And despite all the propaganda that the Japanese had been feeding them, the Japanese were not actually winning the war. America was still free. The Allies had won the Battle of Midway. MacArthur was hopping island to island to the east and winning. This was astounding news, incredible news. They might be rescued. They might be freed. But how do you spread that news? Because as soon as somebody tells somebody in the camp, the guards are going to know that that information came in somehow. People will ask questions and it'll get back to Hutch. So what Hutch did, he invented a prisoner. That prisoner's name was Keiji, K-G-E-I. Well, Keiji says that MacArthur is heading across the Pacific. Keiji says that. And the rumor made it all the way across the camp. And suddenly these guys who thought that they would be spending the rest of their lives, however long that may be, in degrading and depressing conditions, had hope for the first time. So they waited and waited. And they came to the realization that, yes, they could be rescued, but the Japanese, being who they are, might not let that happen. There was a rumor in the camp that if MacArthur hit the Philippines, they would all be executed and the camps burned to hide any evidence of the atrocities that had happened. So there was quite a bit of concern. But what happened first, the Japanese, realizing that MacArthur was just a short distance away, moved the prisoners off the Davao camp on Mindanao up to the main island, Luzon, up to the Cabana Tuan camp. So Hutch, not wanting to lose his radio, tore it all apart to the individual components. Where to hide the components? The word was that they were going to be placed in a cargo ship and shipped up to the camp in Cabana Tuan. So he needed to hide his components. Well, a likely hiding place, and what he came up with, had to do with the Red Cross care packages that were distributed to the troops. The Red Cross came by, distributed the packages to the camps. The Red Cross, being the International Humanitarian Association, wanted to inspect the camps to make sure there was no mistreatment of the prisoners. Well, of course, the Japanese would have no part of that. They did not permit the Red Cross onto the camps, but they would permit the care packages. These care packages were then stuck in a warehouse on the camp and doled out a little at a time to those prisoners who were in good graces. Hutch happened to be one. So he got his care package, and within that care package was the lovely can of corned beef. Oh, corned beef, tasty corned beef, much better than the fried dog and rice and stuff that he'd been having for the past 2.5 years. So what he did, he gathered up his cans of corned beef, stuffed his radio components in with some sand so it had the right weight, soldered the lid back on, and pasted a fresh label over it so it looked to anybody like a can of corned beef.
You're listening to the amazing story behind the most ingenious and fearless American World War II POW, Russell Hutch Hutchinson, who overcame enormous odds to beat his Japanese captors at their own game. Dave Kripe, NM0S, will conclude the captivating story about this remarkable World War II American POW after I remind you that these rain reports are available weekly on Twitter at #TheRainReport and online, on demand, on therainreport.com.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
So as the fateful day came when they took the prisoners out of Davao, they stuck them on the Oryuku Maru, which was colloquially known as a hell ship. These were cargo ships that the Japanese used for prisoner transports. They had no comforts whatsoever. They were literally cargo ships. So they were placed in these ships, standing room only, 500 of them in the middle of summer, sweltering heat, given basically 2 cups of water per day. The holds were sealed. They were in total darkness the entire time. 5 days out, Hutch goes to his duffel bag to check on his cans of corned beef and finds out that his duffel had been rifled through and somebody had gotten to it, opened the cans of corned beef looking for food, and spilled out the sand and the components. If he is found with these radio components, he will be killed. No question about it. So what's he going to do? He remembered an old issue of Boy's Life magazine talking about how you can hide things in a bar of soap. So he managed to come up with some cakes of laundry soap and with a spoon hollowed them out, jammed the radio components in, put the soap shavings back over the top, peed on it to seal it, and nobody was the wiser. So once he got to Cabana Tuan, he insinuated himself within the folks in the know and found out that there were people talking about Hutch and his radio. It turns out there was another Hutch at Cabana Tuan. This was Homer Hutchison. He was a ham from Texas. He'd already built a radio. This one he had hidden in a mess kit, built his own battery out of copper pennies and zinc pants buttons, used battery acid stolen out of a car, and he was able to monitor the news of the Pacific War. So our Hutch laid low for a while, decided he wasn't going to build his radio back for another couple of months, but once he did, he built it inside a canteen. Now, the way that the canteens were, they came with a canvas cover, and so you can do basically anything down inside, and as long as it's in the cover, you can't tell what's happening. And so this was his plan. Took his old canteen, cut a hole in it, mounted his 12 SK-7 and his components, built up his power supply again, and this time he chose his base of operation as the chapel in the Cabana Tuan camp. Yes, the chapel had a single light bulb. The chaplain there said, yeah, you can use it, but understand, if you're on that radio and the guards come in, you just pray like hell. In December 1944, MacArthur landed on Mindanao. And so it was just a matter of time the Japanese realized they would be overrun and that bit of the war would be lost. So to salvage what they could, they rounded up all of the skilled and able-bodied prisoners that were still alive, put them back on the Oryuku Maru, and sent them to Japan to work in the factories. Not wanting to risk being discovered with his radio again, Hutch gave it to the care of another ham, William Gibson, who took notes of its construction and later authored a chapter of the Signal Corps history of World War II. And it is from that single account that we know anything of the construction of that radio. After Hutch was put on the Oryuku Maru and sent off to Japan, this time, instead of with 500 other troops, he was crowded in with 1,600 other troops, shoulder to shoulder. They were not alone in the cargo hold. They shared the cargo hold with 55-gallon drums of horse urine, which were used by the Japanese to extract the nitrates out for use in explosives. But the ammonia fumes bleached all their hair white. 3 days out from the coast of the Philippines, they were spotted by Allied planes. Now, the Japanese did not mark their POW ships. Geneva Convention states that you have to place a white cross on POW ships. This did not happen. The Allied aircraft spotted the Oryuku Maru and started bombing it. This is the Oryuku Maru, a picture taken from a gun sight camera. These little speckles right here are the POWs swimming to shore. The ones that didn't drown and the ones who weren't eaten by sharks, there were 257 survivors from the original crew of 1,600. and Hutch was one of them. They thought they might be free, but they were picked up the next day by another Japanese cargo ship, taken to Japan. On January 30th, 1945, the Kabanatuan camp was liberated. I believe it was 400 survivors were rescued. And in the chaos, Hutch's radio was lost, destroyed, and all that we know about it is from this depiction. Hutch, because of his skill with machines and tools, was put in a factory in Nagasaki, which was bombed. Hutch witnessed the explosion and assisted in the cleanup operation afterwards for the few days before Japan surrendered. But he survived, and he went home to Albuquerque, where his wife Barbara had been waiting 4 years, not knowing if he was dead or alive. And they had 4 kids, and he went to work for the government with his civil engineering degree. He didn't mess around with radios at all after that. He did have a nice stereo system, but never really wanted to build one again. What an amazing story. When these boys were liberated, it was a great day. This moment in history has been recorded in a couple of movies. The old John Wayne movie, Back to Bataan. Some of these guys appeared in that movie. He actually cast some of the Kabanatuan survivors in the movie. When I encountered this history, I thought, what better tribute to the heroism of those men, those radio boys, than to build my own. In 1995, the last survivors of the Oryuku Maru gathered for their 50th anniversary, and that's Hutch right there. And he passed in 2003, survived by Barbara and 4 kids. And we remember. That is a story that deserves to be told, and so remarkable of the ingenuity and the heroism that went into this experience. I can't add other than my own little experience trying to duplicate his ingenuity. I do so in tribute to him. This presentation is in memory of him and the other radio boys who served their country.
And that concludes the story of a remarkable World War II American POW, Russell Hutch Hutchinson, a young American soldier who endured great danger to himself in a Japanese POW camp in the Philippines to build a working radio that restored the sagging morale of his 1,600 fellow American POWs. Editorial note, we attempted to reach Dave Kripe, NM0S, via email to learn where he might have posted a photo of Hutch's radio he recreated. There was no response. Hopefully you can find such a photo on the web. If you do, please drop a note to Hap Holly, KC9RP, at Hap, that's with one P, hap@therainreport.com. Thanks to the North Shore Radio Club for hosting such a memorable talk at their February 2015 winter banquet in Wilmette, Illinois. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's executive producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com, and Twitter at #TheRainReport.